The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Wright, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Wright, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Good, thanks. How are you guys, Howard? I see it's all Super Bowl stuff.
Yes, it is indeed. And in fact, that's the first topic we're going to be talking about. New England's Patriots. Julian Edelman was named MVP of last night's Super Bowl in Atlanta.
Absolutely, a most valuable player. Here's the interesting thing. First of all, the owner of the New England Patriots is actually a Jewish man by the name of Robert Kraft.
Told you.
And I think
Dina was very excited about that in studio.
But Julian Edelman, who by the way has a Jewish father as far as I understand, and so from a halachi point of view, is probably not Jewish.
Picky.
I'm with Howard.
Hey, yeah, that's just nitpicking. If what's her name could do it, she could be 1,000th of 26%
Middleton.
No man, Native American. then Julian Edelman is so Jewish.
So Jewish. Edelman, not Jewish.
Julian Edelman is entitled to become a citizen of Israel under the law of return.
Oh, that's there we go. Good enough for me. We're done.
He's actually been on a trip to Israel.
Oh, wow.
And he very much identifies with Israel. It's interesting that there was a game that he played in back a few years ago where he actually wore a pin that had the Israeli flag on it. And, you know, he has tweeted in the past about his Jewish identity. Interestingly, it seems as if though he grew up without much of a Jewish identity, but in recent years has really started to identify a lot with Judaism and with Israel in particular. As I say, he did come on this trip, and apparently he's even written a children's book, nobody knows that, that actually refers to Theodor Herzl, which is very surprising. And, of course, after the Pittsburgh Shul shooting, that killed 11 people. He actually wore special cleats in the next game, which actually had Hebrew on them in order to honor the victims of that particular event. So here's a man who definitely has a lot of identity with the Jewish community, with Israel in particular, MVP, the most unlikely MVP of a Super Bowl because he's not particularly tall and he's not particularly sizable and he's not particularly fast in terms of
he's Jewish. Know, he's he is Jewish, but he can, yeah, but he makes
so we must just accept him.
Right, but he makes
a
mean
kittle.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's all the strategy. Yeah, unbelievable.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway,
that's
a great story.
A great story indeed. Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danon, is touring Israel with a group of fellow United Nations ambassadors from other countries. What's on their agenda for the tour of Israel?
Well, they've met with Prime Minister Netanyahu. They've had a chance to meet with President Ruvi Rivlin. And yesterday they took helicopters from Jerusalem to go to the north in order to have a tour around the Hezbollah terror tunnels, which were uncovered during Operation Northern Shield. And there were members of the engineering corps who were there on site to give the diplomats a tour of the tunnel. They used robotic cameras in order to show them a little bit more about these tunnels. This was a site near Metula, northern Israel. And there was a group, I think, of something like 40-odd ambassadors from different countries all serving at the United Nations, along with Danny Danon. And, of course, the idea for Israel and for Danny Danon in particular, who has been doing tours like this for fellow ambassadors already for some time. This is certainly not the first time that he's brought members of the diplomatic corps from the United Nations to visit Israel. But the idea is to allow people to see things firsthand and therefore potentially influence the way that they behave at the United Nations. And even more than that, potentially even bring more influence to the governments that serve their countries back home. And so it seems to be, you know, having an impact. The Panamanian ambassador, for example, said that he had come to see firsthand the hostile activities against Israel and that he intended to pass on what he saw to show not to talk only about the threats against Israel, but interestingly, he picked up this issue about conveying how Israel is thriving, open and democratic and shares similar values in terms of rule of law you know, the way in which democracy operates in this country. So I think that that's a very interesting perspective. And similarly, there was a quote from the South Sudan ambassador who who also noted how important it was to be able to see facts on the ground. So I think that, you know, this is like birthright for UN ambassadors. And there's certainly no, nothing that can replace the importance of seeing things firsthand. And, you know, this is something that Israel has done for many, many years in various different spheres, whether it be bringing school children or university students or UN ambassadors to visit Israel, to see things firsthand. And, you know, that just reinforces how important it is to be here, to experience it and to see firsthand, instead of being influenced by all the news that you see on CNN and BBC and Sky News or whatever people tend to watch these days, because that really doesn't tell the story. So, well done to Danny Danon. Interestingly, you know, he's really come good at the United Nations. It was an interesting appointment because one had the feeling that Prime Minister Netanyahu appointed him to the United Nations to get him out of the way. He was a thorn in the side of the prime ministers at the time that he was serving in the Knesset, even within the prime minister's own party. And he's really been doing a fantastic job for Israel at the United Nations.
Amazing. And, incredible indeed. Israel's begun the construction of a smart fence along the Gaza border.
Yes, so this is a very interesting concept, and particularly against the backdrop of the Mexican wall, because obviously there is some similarity that we see in this, but except that here in Israel, there's no issue about government close downs or funding issues. The funding has been made available, and a smart fence is now being constructed along 65 kilometers, is the length of the Gaza border. And it stretches right from the sea barrier, which is at the northern part of the Gaza border, Zikim Beach, which is in the north. And it goes all the way down in the south to the Kerem Shalom crossing, which is at the Egyptian border. So that 65 kilometer length will all be guarded ultimately by this new smart fence, which is made from galvanized steel. Apparently it weighs something like 20,000 tons and the fence will be 6 meters in height. And the smart fence, the bit that's being constructed at the moment, is the above ground part, as opposed to the underground system, which has already been in construction. And it also sits alongside a 200 meter sea barrier that has been constructed along the Gaza border at the north near Zikim Beach, which is made up of three layers, including one layer below the sea level, which is lined with seismic detectors and other tools. And then there's a layer of armored stone, and then there's a third layer in the form of a mound. And then there's also a 6 meter smart fence that surrounds the breakwater, this barrier, in order to provide this final security measure. But the fence itself is going to be armed with all kinds of detectors and all kinds of cameras, which will be able to make sure that there is no threat to Israel, and that any threat that comes along that area will be able to be picked up very quickly and will be reacted to immediately. And it will be virtually impossible to be able to cross over the fence, because it will be so tall and will be so secure. And of course, the underground section, which is not really even being discussed at the moment, pretty much, the underground section is also under construction. And this will actually have the ability to detect any tunnel construction that might take place in that area. So this whole boundary, this whole border along the Gaza Strip, is being taken very, very seriously indeed. There's no talk about how much money all of this is costing. And I suppose that says a lot in its own right, meaning that, the money is really not the object here. This is really all about security and taking security very seriously. What's interesting is that a similar fence has already been constructed along the Egyptian border. And this was really at the time that Israel was suffering, back in 2010, 11, 12, 13, even, when Israel was suffering from a lot of infiltrations from the Sinai, many illegal African immigrants arriving in Israel. And the way that the fence has operated has been extremely impressive indeed. And the success of the fence is really measured by the number of infiltrations that took place over the years once the fence had been constructed. And for example, there were something like 14 or 15,000 infiltrations between 2010 to 2013. Then all of a sudden, in 2016, we had only 14 infiltrations in that particular year. So this fence has really done what it needs to do in order to make sure that Israel is secure and that people cannot illegally enter the country. And the same will be true along the Gaza border as well. And we hope that the smart fence will help in order to avoid some of the confrontations that we have been seeing in recent months along that Gaza border. It doesn't say how long the fence will take to be constructed, but I'm guessing that it's going to be taken very, very seriously indeed. And when you have a look at some of the pictures of the way in which this fence is going to be built, it is certainly quite an impressive structure indeed. It's not a wall. It is a fence. You can see through it, but it seems to be incredibly secure with many different layers of security really built into it.
So in other words, because when I saw this, I was a bit confused. In other words, there might well be an existing, or there is an existing border there, but this is replacing that. Is that right?
Correct. Correct. Okay. That's correct.
But I couldn't
the border that's there at the moment is far less secure. And as we've seen in the protests in recent months, it has been possible for people from Gaza to actually cut their way through the fence and infiltrate into Israel. And we have had a number of cases where there were infiltrations. And of course, this is putting a lot of pressure on the IDF personnel, not only from a personnel point of view, making sure that people have to be there all the time to watch and have cameras up and all the rest of it, but also brings people into danger, because the moment somebody infiltrates and cuts their way through the fence, then you have to go and track them down, and nobody really knows what might ensue in that particular confrontation. So hopefully the new smart fence, everything's going to be smart these days, right? The new smart fence will be able to avoid confrontations like that.
Incredible. The Palestinian Authority has now revealed that they are not planning to push for a permanent representation at the UN General Assembly quite yet. Why did they reach this decision now, Anthony?
Well, it seems as if that this is really mostly influenced by the fact that they understand that any resolution that's being brought to the United Nations Security Council on this matter will be vetoed by the United States. And I think that the Palestinians have finally resigned themselves to this fact. And by the way, this comes against the backdrop of an announcement last week that all U.S. funding to the Palestinian Authority has been completely ceased. So, you know, there's certainly a pattern here. There's certainly a very, very strong message that's coming through from the United States about the Palestinian Authority trying to sneak up in a way which is not part of a formally negotiated agreement with Israel. And we know that they have up until now, year after year, particularly during the summertime or the summer in the U.S., General Assembly meetings, it normally takes place in the middle of the year, that the Palestinians have always somehow managed to gain some progress. They've got a little bit more than they had before. We've seen recently that they took over the chairmanship of this this particular, you know, what Howard Saxteen described as non-UN group. And but the point is that all of these little victories have given them a little bit more confidence to try to grab a little bit more and to grab a little bit more. And eventually they've now, it seems, reached the limit whereby they've formally said that they're not going to make a push this year to try and get formal membership of the United Nations. They understand that that's going to be a virtually impossible, if not an absolutely impossible move to make. And so they've finally acknowledged that this is not going to happen. And even though they have ascended to the head of the group of 77, you know, all of these developing states, there has been there was also another victory for the Israeli side against the Palestinian Authority in the United Nations, when Israel managed to block the Palestinians gaining observer status for a year to the United Nations linked conference on disarmament. And the argument was that only formal UN states are eligible for this privilege. The United States agreed with that. And as a result of the cooperation between Israel and the United States, the Palestinian Authority was blocked from this particular forum. So it seems as if though at the United Nations, things may well calm down a little bit. We will, of course, be watching very eagerly as the UN General Assembly season begins in a few months' time.
Absolutely, we most certainly will. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for the Israel Report. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow.